Start. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Then.
You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Hello. Yeah. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
In relation to this whole banking thing, apart from it being ridiculous, I think we as Barbadians, we just talk about the situation but don't do nothing. We have credit unions here that whoever our members are, shareholders, basically. If I were the populace here in this country, I would put all my savings in the credit union. Reserve the bank, perchance I have foreign bills to pay. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I don't understand why the bank, you put your money in the bank. They're not giving you no interest. They're lending your money out and getting a big interest on it. And then they're turning and charging you to keep it.
So doesn't that imply that there's a lopsided relationship between the commercial banks and the rest of the community? To me, that's what it implies.
But the thing is, David, you know, in this day and age, you really can't keep the money home.
Precisely.
On the bedding and in a tart and burying a trash ground like olden days.
So you establish one of the reasons why the relationship may be lopsided.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, you have the credit unions. I would put my savings in the credit union.
And who do they bank with?
They bank with the banks.
Okay.
I mean, they would have some measure of control as to what interest. I mean, they're giving more interest in the banks anyway. But I think the government should look into this, and I don't see any other country suffering the way we're suffering because people say we have a lot of education, but simply no common sense to go with it. And I think that is what should prevail. Common sense should prevail. But as I said, if I come out and have a big car picketing against the banks, nobody ain't going to join me. Everybody thinks, well, you can't keep your money home. It's like something so expensive, but you're buying it because you can't eat the money. That kind of attitude is what we have as Barbadians. But I think the government should really look into the whole situation of the banking and put some measure of control.
I agree with you, caller. The interesting development that I am monitoring at this stage is the way how the new generation of young people are viewing the whole banking system. I have been witness to an event where young people were invited to discuss alternative ways of handling their money, not necessarily taking the money out of the banks, but doing as the banks do with our money and directly investing in foreign exchange. And these online movements, people talk about them, David, and they say that it's like the Quick Stars and Amways and this type of pyramid scheme, and they frown on them. But I was at the gymnasium about 3 weeks ago where there was standing room only, where young people, most of them under 40, were basically exploring ways how they can make their money work for them, recognizing that the current banking system really does not do anything for you. And even if we were to go back to the days, as the previous caller mentioned, where interest rates were like 1.5%, our inflation rate right now is about 4%. So that interest rate would not do anything for your money in terms of growth. 5,000 plus people were standing room only, were in the gymnasium the other day.
But what were their options? When you say they were exploring these options, what did they see as the potential?
Well, the banks take our money and they invest in foreign exchange and cryptocurrencies and all these different things. So people in Barbados, especially young people, are asking themselves, why can't I go ahead and do it directly? So they're looking at circumventing the banks altogether. So that I would dare say that the unbanked in Barbados, it's perhaps going to increase over the next few years. the extent to which the banks can re-attract these people with the types of creative products that you discussed when you were reading that story from RBC, it's left to be seen. But I think people in Barbados, just like how they quietly went to the polls on the 24th of May without any fanfare and dealt a lethal blow to the previous administration, I think Barbadians, in their own very perhaps docile way, are looking at quietly moving their money from the banks and finding other ways to get their money to work for them. And I'm saying to you that there was only standing room in the gymnasium as persons convened to discuss how can I find ways to make money work for me, especially in these dire economic circumstances that we're facing. So
while we had this meeting in Jamaica on last week, Wednesday, when the finance ministers of the region, they have this special committee within CARICOM that met for the first time in 5 years. I mean, we have all these troubling issues, huh? And they met for the first time in 5 years, according to what was said at the end of conference, press conference. And surely this must rank among the issues, because we are not the only ones troubled by it. Remember, not so long ago, you had people in St. Vincent and other Eastern Caribbean countries rebelling against bank charges. And I have no doubt that what we are identifying here as an issue is relevant to so many other people across the wider Caribbean. So to what extent is it possible and likely that ministers of finance may want to put something like this on their agenda? Left to be seen, especially in light of the fact that the Prime Minister of Barbados was talking about the need for people to have investment opportunities in other Caribbean countries because of what they were getting in return from the commercial banks. This is down to brass tacks. Crystal Austin has a comment, an observation on this whole question of the summer camps. So share with us.
Yes, I want to empathize with all the parents out there today, being the very first day of our 2018 summer period. I want to empathize especially with those who, having been told very last minute that the camps have been postponed pending review, those parents who now have to figure out where they can allocate their children, or may not have been able to find places, may not have had the funding to allocate those children. And I'm very concerned, especially because I work with the young people in Haynesville, in the Haynesville Youth Club, and I understand the challenges that this situation has created. I do believe that the camps may have been overextended, wherein the free food and the stipends and whatnot may have created a monster in terms of the program and the cost. But I remember being a 16-year-old and having my very first quote-unquote work experience as a camp counselor. And that would have provided me with a platform from which I could then move forward. And I know others, there's another young man that I know who would have started out as a counselor, and he's worked his way all the way up to a very prominent financial institution in the UK, but he always keeps on his resume that he started out as a counselor. So that opportunity for those young people, it was very disappointing for them, and I was there when the ones in Haynesville were filling out their forms, hoping to be chosen, only to be told a week later that the camps had been sacked. Then there's the whole issue of those people who would have relied on the food from the camp to ensure that their children had something solid to eat during the day till they got back home. And this is a reality that a lot of people in Barbados face, especially coming out of the difficult 10 years that we would have faced. Many of our working class people were basically obliterated. That whole class has been flattened. A lot of people, despite the fact that they may live in a really nice home, have been struggling to make ends meet, to provide meals for their kids. And this deficit has now created a further headache for persons. And we talked earlier about some of the things that this current administration has done that may not have flown well with the public. And I think this is one. And not enough has been said, or not enough details have been provided as it relates to the alternatives or the support. I heard something very vaguely said about some types of facility that will be put in place to assist those who are already doing camps. But I'm very concerned that for the next 8 weeks, we have a lot of young, impressionable young people, some of whom will be at home by themselves, having to supervise themselves in the absence of these camps.
What is the environment out there like for those people, though? You talked about the difficulty in getting food for some of them, but the general environment, how dangerous is it?
I would say it is moderately dangerous in that you will always have those factions of society with the drug culture and the promotion of promiscuity and this type of thing. You always have those factions out there. I wouldn't say that it is to an extent where Barbadians should be panicking, but certainly I am concerned that left to their own devices, some of these young people may find themselves lured away and create further difficulties for the government. So we may save money through the summer camps, but then we may put pressure on our social services trying to rein these young people back in.
Is it possible to refine this particular program in any way so that one anticipates that the big concern will be the cost of doing it?
Definitely.
All right? And you have to weigh that against the concerns that you have just raised, which is that there are some vulnerable people out there. So have you given any thought to perhaps how we could refine it in such a way that if we have to bring the cost down, we can still meet the needs of the people who are most vulnerable?
Yeah, most definitely. I believe that we really need to relook the costs as it pertains to the catering. I think that may have been one of the major expenses. I'm not sure if they explored, for example, leveraging the benefits of the school meal service to help keep that cost down. I think there is room for our corporate businesses to demonstrate social responsibility in providing support to these entities to help underwrite the cost, because a strong community benefits all of us, not just the government and the parents, but business as well. It ensures that these young persons don't get up to mischief. And we've seen some very young people getting involved in criminal activity of late. I would say that it is imperative that perhaps some kind of public-private partnership be created to ensure that we can protect those who are most vulnerable. But I want to make it clear that I'm not advocating for the continuity of the massive freeness, because again, during my time, I was not given a stipend to be a counselor. I had to make my way there and make my way back home and provide my own meals as a counselor. It was an opportunity given to me. I saw some relevance in government stepping in and trying to give those persons some incentive to ensure that they have, you know, bus fare and whatnot. But perhaps they may need to consider some other way of financing it. If they don't remove the stipend altogether, they may have to look at perhaps, as I said, some public-private partnership to help with the funding. But it is concerning for me that in 2 weeks, two weeks prior to the end of school, parents were given this shocker that there will be no national summer camps. And we all know that the cost of everything in Barbados has gone up. So for persons who are already struggling, trying to make ends meet, dealing with the increases in the water bill that have just been brought out, the reduction in income with the new NIS deductions, all of these things have already put pressure on our families and our households. Now for them to have to find money to pay for a camp,
It seems to me like too much. At the back of all of this, I mean, I've raised a couple of issues here, and I try to flag things because Barbadians shouldn't really be surprised about what could come and hit them. With the best will in the world, a number of things that we have taken for granted in this country can be threatened by the state of this country's economy. And it is exactly these people that you just identified who can be hit hardest by the changes that we have to make. So the big issue that confronts us is, first of all, bracing for possible change. And once, if that change does come about, then how do we assist each other? You talked about being a counselor in the camp, but you might have to become a counselor in the home so that people can be, you know, you can guide and help cushion the impact of some of the measures that may have to come our way. I mean, I'm trying to be realistic here because of all that we've been through over the last 10 years or so. And now with the change of government, we've been put in a situation where we've had more taxation, more difficulties, and we anticipate that more adjustment is going to come our way. So I just put that on the table for what it's worth. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning, Ms. Ellis.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, good morning. Hello?
Hello. How are you? I'm well.
Good morning, Ms. Ellis. In relation to this, I'm surprised that people are talking about transference, asking, in fact, I heard two on the one senator and someone else asking people to transfer their funds from the credit union to...
From the
credit union to commercial bank. In fact, you just gave the lady the answer there. There's no what sense it makes about the transfer of the money when, in fact, the funds will find the way right back in the commercial bank. See, so it doesn't... In fact, I believe it might be beneficial for the commercial banks because they wouldn't have to take all these small deposits. They only take them in a large form from the credit union. So I can't see any advantage there at all. But you asked what is the answer, right?
Yes.
And I think the late Tom Adams had the answer. In fact, if you recall, the old savings bank, right, was in a very similar position to the credit union. The savings bank was just a lodgement gathering institution, and they had to deposit funds at all the commercial banks. In fact, they had accounts at all the commercial banks in Bridgetown. But what Tom Adams recognized, look, I'm sure he was smart enough to recognize, look, we were losing a lot of foreign exchange. Don't forget, the substantial, not only that, the savings bank had all the cooperatives and so on, right? And all those funds found their way into the foreign commercial bank. Smart as Tom Adams was, Tom Adams recognized, look, let me tell you all something. In fact, he won the election in 76. By April 78, National Bank was open. And I am sure, given how smart that guy was, he recognized, look, here we can, these people are taking our deposits, lending them back to us, making profit, repatriating profits, and we were losing foreign exchange. And he recognized that. Immediately, he stopped that. All the deposits now went to National Bank. We had all the credit unions. In fact, when he worked at Willie, we had virtually all the credit unions that were in National Bank. So the whole thing about it is the answer is having a bank of your own to benefit your country. If you don't have that, you're not going to get the full benefit to Barbadians.
But it is harder these days, some people will say, to start a bank of your own, especially in light of the difficulties that even existing commercial banks have been facing in getting what are called correspondent banks abroad.
Well, the correspondent bank issue is another matter. Let me tell you why the correspondent bank is there. In fact, a lady who once told me there was a problem because, do not forget, a bank from Barbados is very small. And these international banks are looking at the kind of volume because they make large sums of money from these this correspondent relationship.
That's not what I understand to be their primary concern. Their primary concern is the amount of money that they're earning from us. It's the risk that they are exposed to if something goes wrong.
I don't know. Well, maybe that's part of it. But I know
that's a big part of it.
I was told that a major problem was, also you can't discount that, is the amount of money they make from large things. In fact, I was told they treat banks from these minor banks with can't respect. They don't the transfers, they don't, someone told me how they treated them. They with very little respect. Whereas you're getting large sums of money from Chinese banks and so on, commission from those things. That's a major concern. That's a major problem, right? But you were talking about start. I know it is difficult to start a bank now, but I thought I'm really referring to the fact that he has the vision to set up a bank for Barbadians. We had none. He set up one, and others decided to sell it. And some said it was a wise idea. I never thought it was. And today, I always say, there is no vision, the people perish.
Remember where that money was supposed to go? That money was supposed to go into developing the Hilton, right?
Right, all right.
I know the Hilton has been put up there on the auction block.
All right, okay then. Okay.
And it comes right back to, I mean, that the economy was better then than it is right now. And it was considered necessary to do that. But that does not, that didn't stop us running into the current situation that we're in, which means that the fundamental is the structural change that is required so that we don't just fix the problem today, but we have more of a medium to long-term fix to the problem. Let me share this with you, though. This person says that they have experience as a credit unionist for many years. And while in general they support the idea of switching from the banks to the credit unions, there are two realities. Credit unions have over $100 million deposited by law in the banking system. It earns that same low rate of deposit. If that increased significantly, it is pretty obvious that the credit unions would drastically reduce their interest rates also. And let's say, secondly, the credit unions do not have deposit insurance. So if there were to be a failure, as a consumer, you would have a bigger risk than if you were banking with the bank, where you're protected up to $25,000 per bank or something like that. So the credit unions, says the writer, are very limited in their ability to invest as well. It's either deposits with other credit unions, banks or regulated entities, or loans. With loan demand at a low, this is part of why the banks are giving such low interest rates and why credit unions that should lend out 90% of their deposits in loans. But except for two or three large credit unions, they lend out less than this benchmark, according to what this person has written here. So it is there are challenges in trying to make that kind of transition.
I agree with the writer. I agree totally with the writer.
But if you improve the macro environment, if you improve the economy, if you get growth in the economy, wouldn't that be a safer way to go in trying to get a better break from the commercial banks? Is that not what they're asking for?
It would be wonderful to have growth, Mr. Ellis, but how do you get growth in this environment?
You think it's impossible?
How do we get growth in this environment?
You think it's impossible?
Very little growth. I cannot see, given the state of Barbados economy right now, what growth there's going to be and looking ahead.
Well, let me hear you.
Let me say this to you, right? Consider a Barbados where we still own Barbados National Bank, right? Insurance Corporation of Barbados. The shares in the BET that was established by the same Tom Adams. The 25% shares in Barbados Light and Power, and so on. And Barbados Mills, yes, Barbados Feeds, all of those entities. Imagine these were all the companies that were formed by the late Tom Adams, right, during his time in office. Consider if this country had even sold off some of those to the people and Barbados. You realize the amount of foreign exchange that we would save from repatriating profits? That's why I tell you, the man had a vision. He had a vision that a lot of the others don't seem to have.
Foreign exchange from the repatriation of profits. What is it that we are looking for most of all, though? That by itself is not what you're looking for.
No, I'm saying that's by itself. That is one. There's a factor, because when you have to use foreign exchange to repatriate profits, it means that affects your balance of payment, your foreign currency balance, all of that. And the foreign reserves.
Well, we lost, $2 billion in 7 years or something like that because of the Canadian market. I mean, these are the things that we need to be looking at. I regret to say that, to a large extent, when I listen to debate in this country, we put a lot of focus on what I see as the small stuff rather than looking at the big picture and looking. There's a sense of boldness and an adventurism that I believe is missing. And this is where the discussion that Crystal talked about with the young people coming together.
Fintech.
Yeah, fintech.
The financial technology. I mean, the fiat currencies are on their way out, to put it lightly. I mean, the digital revolution that we've seen, for example, affect the way how we communicate with all the social media, has also penetrated in the financial sector. And I believe that it is going to be some time before we catch up, because we seem to like to play catch up But the rest of the world is already moving in that direction. You're seeing the big auditing firms and the big banks getting involved in the bitcoins and whatnot, the cryptocurrencies, and certainly it is only a matter of time
before we see that transformation. We are highly risk averse.
We are.
And there are a lot of people in our environment who want certainty. They believe that you will only get involved in something when you can be certain as to where it is going to take you. This is the early stage of the cryptocurrency environment. Therefore, you've got to be adventurous. But because there are so few people who have that type of mindset, it becomes important that the government environment is such that it can encourage those people so that they can take the risks, but recognize that, you know, we are also looking to have some measure of regulation. I think Cayman Islands and some other places have been looking at that as well, Bahamas, Bermuda. So all I see here is that we cannot just look at the traditional way of doing things.
Correct. Yeah. We've seen in the past how being late to the party can affect us. And with investment, everyone knows that you get in at the IPO, the initial public offering. That's where you really make the money. You don't come in when the share price, I mean, right now, for example, Bitcoin, which started out at $1, is now worth $6,719.8.
Well, that's because it fell up. Well, it fell away
because I think it peaked at 20,000 or something.
There was a problem recently.
Yeah, but the point is that we have to be, yes, concerned about risk and be responsible in the way how we approach risk. But certainly, if we wait until it's too late to get to the party, half the cake is gone. And that is really what's happening with the financial technologies.
Yeah, so on this same score, one of the callers here has been lamenting all the things that we sold, the assets, government assets that were sold. But there's little discussion about what about these young players, young people who've got good ideas and they're working with them, but they can't get any investment. We are not prepared to get in at the IPO level, as you suggested. Part of it is we don't even know who these people are. And more needs to be done in this regard.
David, you've touched on an issue that is very, very dear to my heart. The bridge between those brilliant ideas and getting, for example, some of our depositors to move some of their money really is research, data, statistics.
Information
needs to be there to convince persons to move their money. I mean, at this point in time, getting 0.01%, I believe that good few of those persons are very much open to alternatives to move some percentage, even if it's only 10% of that money that is currently not getting any interest, into something that would give them interest. The responsibility, to my mind, rests to some extent with the Barbados Statistical Service. And I think that in its current form, it has become archaic. It needs to be restructured into more of a research and development type entity where the information that it produces is not just the basic statistics supporting things like GDP measurement or whatnot, but that it actually works, for example, in hand in hand with the university to ensure that the data that it produces helps to inform national development.
So what would it be putting up there so that people who have an idea and are working, the people who are working on projects, would be able to get that information to the public? Come back to me when we come back to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks.
Yes, we were talking about the importance of research and development and expanding the role of the Barbados Statistical Service. For those of you now tuning in, this is Crystal Austin, and I am the guest today on Brass Tacks. The point I was making before we went to break is that we really need to provide our depositors and other would-be investors in Barbados with opportunities to support those who have good ideas. And I think if better research and data was being produced pursuant to these types of national development matters, that it would enhance the risk sensibilities or the extent to which people can take responsible risks in this direction. And to give an example, we have the influx of the sargassum seaweed, which has been causing a lot of challenges for us. And lots of research has been done in terms of all the alternative ways that we can leverage that bugbear and turn it into something profitable. People have looked at it from the perspective of it being something that we can eat. I've seen chefs dabbling in it and so on. We've also been looking at it from a fertilizer perspective. And I'm sure that as we move forward with the blue economy, you'll probably be looking at it from a biotechnology perspective. Are there ways, for example, to extract properties from the seaweed to produce beauty products or pharmaceuticals and whatnot? So to my mind, that type of research needs to be spearheaded at a national level. And I'm saying to you that the Barbados Statistical Service in its current iteration may need to be reformatted and restructured to enable this type of research. It is time for Barbados to be on the forefront of discovery of these types of things. And the caller before talked about where we're going to get growth. The only way we're going to get growth is if we step out and do things that are new, that are different, that are groundbreaking. And the only way that we can do that and create that intellectual property that Barbados can own is if we inform these decisions through solid research.
Well, my biggest regret in all of this is that in many instances we looked to find the solutions ourselves. Each Caribbean country is trying its best to do it all on its own, notwithstanding the size of its population and the limitations of size. And I was pretty encouraged this time around at what came out of this CARICOM Heads of Government meeting. I got a sense that there was a renewed enthusiasm. I heard people speaking about the Golding Report out of Jamaica and how that seemed to galvanize a whole set of support for trying to make sure that the regional integration movement works. These issues need to be tackled regionally as well. I mean, I can't see us sitting down here trying to tackle sargassum seaweed by ourselves. This is a regional experience. And this requires the University of the West Indies, some of the best minds that we can bring together so that we can all share in trying to find a solution there. As it relates to the whole question of the use of technology, financial technology and things like that, Trinidadians, Guyanese, Jamaicans, we are all working towards the same goal. And, you know, if we can get the regional integration process to that level, then we would achieve far more than we have achieved so far. We're coming right back to continue this edition of Down to Brass Stats.